You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
What's up, innovators? Tamara here, your host and experiential risk taker. That's how I innovate. How do you innovate? How about you go to gotolaunchstreet.com and find out how to tap your greatest competitive advantage? So this episode of Inside Launch Street is brought to you by Brility Digital, uncommonly perceptive digital marketing partner who helps transform your business from the inside out. And because I didn't want to just bring you a sponsor, I also interview the president, Derek Kuhn, about halfway through this podcast. He's got some serious value bombs for you. And now, do you admire those people that, I don't know, they seem to see opportunities where the rest of us just see gaps? I know I do. I'm always in awe of those people. The ability to see what's missing and then bring to life a way to fill it, it's a real skill. In fact, it's a skill of people that have an instinctual style of innovation, like Jack Haldrup, the founder of Dr. Squatch. That's right, kind of like Sasquatch. This is an all-natural line of grooming products for men with names like Pine Tar and Bay Rum. Jack was searching and searching for a product that was gentle on the skin but still masculine. Didn't exist, so he created it. We can all learn a lot from finding innovation in the gaps. Kind of like we talk about in this interview. Enjoy. Jack, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, now that I've used your products, which we will dig into, I smell great, and I'm even more so looking forward to the conversation. But since we're new to each other, what's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Yeah, I don't know if this is surprising, but something I'm really into this time of year is March Madness, college basketball. Just a huge fan of all of it. I love the brackets. I love cheering for the underdog.
So here's my question, though. Do you map out ahead of time? I'm assuming you're in some kind of league, right, where there's points and like prizes. But are you good at guessing who's going to move forward and making those predeterminations?
Sometimes. You know, I think I won one at my dad's office when I was like 12. And maybe that's when I became obsessed with it. Because, you know, I was like, oh, I'm the best.
Oh my God, that's awesome. Hey, sometimes all you need is a little validation to keep going in life, right?
Yeah.
That's so funny. I don't watch it all. In fact, when you said it just this minute, I thought, oh yeah, that's right. Basketball's on. That's funny. So tell us about Dr. Squatch and the story behind it.
Yeah. So it started a little over 6 years ago. I had a corporate job and I don't know if it was like specifically I read the 4-Hour Workweek, but I know I read it around that time frame, and I basically like realized that I needed to start a business or that I wanted to start a business. And so that was going on in like one part of my brain, right? And then so then I had to like come up with a business idea, which is always the hardest part. And so I just kind of started looking at things that were going on in my life, and I happened to be simultaneously kind of going down this rabbit hole of getting really into nutrition, which was kicked off by these symptoms that I started getting that are actually from like an autoimmune skin condition that I have. So, you know, long story short, I got really into nutrition and looking at natural ways to manage the symptoms. And then that got me interested in personal care products, because obviously I'm putting those directly on my skin. I have these skin problems. And so I started looking into that. I started using, you know, higher quality products, more natural products. And in particular, I was a big fan of these like handmade soaps that I was buying at farmers markets or like specialty stores. And I just thought it was interesting that I used a soap and I was like, wow, this is awesome. Like, I really like how it feels. I like the whole experience. And to me, that was something that I'd never thought about my entire life. And so it kind of just clicked. And, you know, specifically what I wanted to do and why kind of the Dr. Squatch brand was born was I wanted to take this product that I thought was really good and try to sell it to an audience that normally wouldn't buy it, which is kind of like just men in general, or kind of like what I would say is like, you know, average guy or just like, you know, a young guy that's not necessarily super into, you know, natural products, basically convince him to try this through kind of funny branding.
So I just want to ask you quickly about your funny branding, because one of the things that I loved, what I do love, is the name of the soaps. Mm-hmm. Like, they're so different. Well, which are some of your favorites?
So my personal favorite is the Gold Moss. It's kind of like this woody, almost little sweet flavor to it. And then also the Bay Rum. Those are my favorites. Our bestseller is Pine Tar, which is a very...
I loved that name, by the way. I just laughed out loud.
It's a polarizing one. It's black and it's like, it's got this sand in it. So it's really heavy duty. So it's kind of a love it or hate it type of product.
You know, so when I got the products, I used that one, Pine Tar, because I was like, oh, that sounds awesome. Interesting. Yeah. And then I realized I was walking around all day smelling like a 20-year-old man. I was like, why are people looking at me funny? I'm a 46-year-old woman. I don't see the problem. It was awesome. A couple things I want to ask you about. First is, you just said it, right? You wanted to see if you could sell this product to a target audience who doesn't normally think about this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. In approaching a target audience that way, that's maybe not prime, doesn't have past experience, mm-hmm. But you know there's a need, how did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, so first and foremost, I knew that if I could create a product that I wanted to buy, like I would be a customer for, then I knew that like I just had to find more people like me. So I kind of just, on a logical level, that's where I started. And I would say in a lot of ways, when I started the company, I was just too naive to know if this was going to be hard, or I just didn't know anything. I didn't know any better. My only frame of reference was like, okay, I have to build something that I know is good. Otherwise, like, how can I tell people it's a good product if I don't know myself? So I just kind of started there.
And what was the initial response?
Initial response was like more positive than I expected. I remember starting to get some of the first sales that like weren't coming from friends and family and getting positive feedback. And I was like, oh wow, this could actually go somewhere. And I think the first three or four months that I was doing it was kind of in the Christmas period. Like I said, it's about 6 years ago, and you know, we sold a few thousand dollars worth. And I was like, wow, like this is
amazing.
Yeah. You know, exactly. Like, I'm a first time entrepreneur. You know, my frame of reference for that was like, wow, this is like, you know, this is going to be big, or like, you know, I didn't really have any, any reference point. So,
The other question I wanted to ask is, I mean, you definitely have a different niche, and for kind of launch readers, you'll see it when you see the product, the name, the packaging, like it definitely, I think it definitely stands out. But you know, I was in the grocery store the other day and I mm-hmm. was walking down the beauty aisle, and I was totally overwhelmed by the amount of choices. Like, it is such a crowded category. Mm-hmm. Overall, and there's just extensions on extensions on extensions. How did you position yourself in a way that really did stand out from mm-hmm. all the other options out there? Because it's really like, it's like the cereal aisle too. Both of those mm-hmm. aisles, you're like, good God, how many choices do I have?
Totally. So when I think about innovation around our product, we think about it at the product level, but also extending out to like the entire customer and marketing experience. And so what I mean by that is we're kind of specifically targeting and specifically doing really well with basically attracting guys who have kind of been using whatever for their whole lives, just whatever they're used to, or whatever is convenient, or whatever their girlfriend or wife uses, or whatever they've been using since they were a kid in terms of their, you know, soap or shower product, and getting them to like rethink that and basically introducing this. So we have to like crack that window or crack that idea into their head that there might be something better out there. And then we're convincing them that ours is the best option. So we're much more going after that customer and converting them to try like a natural soap product for the first time than necessarily saying like, you know, within all these natural soaps, like we're the best because of XYZ and we're competing against these other ones. So I think we're a little bit uniquely positioned in the fact that we're bringing this traditionally handmade product that's oftentimes, you know, like I said, sold at farmers markets or small grocery stores, and we're selling it to a mass market online of guys.
So that's insightful. So if I hear you right, Jack, really what you're saying is, instead of putting yourself on a shelf and going, pick me because I have X more amount of whatever scent, natural mm-hmm. ingredients, whatever, you're mm-hmm. saying, oh, we're going to go find them before they hit that point mm-hmm. and get them hooked yeah. on our stuff.
Yeah. And I think it's important to innovate on multiple levels. I mean, we definitely sell a really high quality product, and it's all natural. So there's certain features about that. But at the end of the day, that type of stuff can always be replicated by a competitor, or can always be, you can kind of do that forever and go down that like feature rabbit, you know, competition. So,
you know, one of the things that struck me as you were talking is, you know, that I always talk about this thing called the ER trap, the ER trap, better, faster, stronger. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard, you just said it, right? That's a hard place to compete because someone else can replicate it. You have to have a great product. So we know that's true about your product. So
sure.
Like you have to
that's
have that.
That's the barrier to entry.
Yeah,
sure.
Right. It's a barrier to entry. So how do you then go about actually finding these young men? Like what is your, when you think about innovation and marketing, how are you going about it in a way that allows you to capture them at that moment?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think, so just to kind of bring it back to that supermarket example, like you said, when you're walking down the aisle, like, so we did spend a lot of time on our packaging and tried to make it stand out, but you know, we have the opportunity when we're selling online to tell a story. And so that we can do that with our content, whether it's video or, you know, just on our website. So I think that allows us a lot more room to tell a story to the customer about why they should think about their soap. Like, you know, is calling out some of the things about, you know, commercialized soap and the, you know, chemical ingredients in there that may not be great for you and showing how ours could be better, like telling that story in a way that will catch their attention. And, you know, what we really try to do is serve them content that they're going to enjoy watching, regardless of if they're going to end up buying the product or not.
So are most of your sales online then?
Yeah. Yeah, 99%.
So fascinating to me, the shift that we've gone from retail being so important to, I wouldn't say being irrelevant, but definitely not the driver for so many products these days.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think we'll get there hopefully, you know, and eventually. And I think it definitely has its place. But if we want to sell our product in a retail environment, you know, it's going to be a way different challenge. And you know, yeah, all we have really is our package to tell the story.
So I have to imagine that once, you know, my nephew, Greg, starts using Dr. Squatch, that he gets hooked on it, right? Like, and he must be kind of, I'm kind of making this up, but tell me if I'm wrong. He must be, I would assume, kind of proud then afterwards because of the branding and the name and, you know, it's all natural. Like, is there total bragging rights to go along with your customers?
Totally. I think, and if you look at some of our Facebook comments in particular, you see that happening and you see people debating in the comments, like on ads, like, you know, hey, is this worth $7? And then people are like, yeah, like I tried this one. And so I think it, one thing that's unique about this product is the masculine branding in this category. And I think it allows guys to, like you said, get excited or proud in a way to talk about them using it versus that may have not been something that they used to do with their other products.
You know, I think, and I've seen this over and over again, sometimes when you do something innovative the way you did, the marketplace tries to pull you towards being like everybody else. You like tries to wash you out a little bit. Ha, no pun intended. That's funny. how do you ensure, and how are you thinking about ensuring that you stay innovative and true to the brand?
Yeah, I think so that kind of origin story that I told you is true. And that still resonates with like how we think about our products and how we think about, you know, new product development, whether that is like new categories of products or new soaps. And I think we, you know, it's a mix between like talking about this with a lot of people the other day, but it's kind of this balance between collecting feedback from your customers and understanding what they want, but still having like a driving vision of your own. You know, you don't want to be completely just only listening to customers, because then you may not be, you know, getting truly innovative ideas, and you don't want to just like do stuff in a vacuum that you don't know if people will like. So it's a little bit of like really understanding that customer feedback while still having the vision, which, you know, for us is kind of that core idea about bringing all natural products to mass market guys.
So will you give me an example of that? Or I'd like to dig in a little bit further, because I think you're right that there is a really a balance between feedback and vision. Because I think customers, I've done a lot of market research in my years, and customers are awesome. And they're really good at telling you how to solve yesterday's problems, because that's what they know. So how do you actually achieve that balance?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's something that as a company, we're still trying to figure out. I think that we do it really well in marketing. I think in terms of at the product level, it's still something that we're trying to figure out. Within the marketing specifically, like we use, I would say, like a structured process to kind of help our creativity. So we have this kind of like growth marketing process where we collect ideas from the whole team, put all the ideas up, have a way that we rank the ideas, And then we choose specific ideas to launch every week, depending on kind of like business needs or different features within the idea. So we're trying to bring some process to creativity, I guess.
And is everybody in the company a part of that?
Everybody that touches marketing is involved in that. Yeah.
Interesting. And do you mind me asking, how do you rank ideas? Because that to me is, you know, people get so like, don't call my baby ugly. They get passionate about things, right? And that's totally understandable. You want passionate people, but there's also objectivity that has to happen. So what have you found is the key to doing it in a way that allows you to drive innovation, but not maybe get bogged down things that are more, maybe not the right thing to move forward?
Yeah, well, so first and foremost, like we have a culture that encourages just the openness. And so anybody can put up any idea. It doesn't have to be something that's like specific to their job role. And the fact that we have kind of this like giant board that we use, it's a software, but as an analogy, we'll call it a giant board. So anybody can throw up whatever idea they want. And the idea itself is not really like, it's not judged on being either good or bad, but the ideas are categorized as like, what is the potential impact, you know, from 1 to 10, what is the confidence we have in this idea working? And then what is like the ease or the effort required? So it systematizes it in that way. And then we also categorize it in terms of different area of the marketing funnel. So we have different goals with marketing. Like we have goals on acquiring more customers. We have goals on getting more efficient with our costs or getting more kind of engaging ad content. And then we have goals around like improving lifetime value. So we know as a business, like, hey, you know, this quarter, for example, we really want to focus on mostly on getting new customers. So we're going to pick mostly ideas in that area. And then what we can talk about, the ones that are there.
So Launch Street, I think what's important to kind of take a pause and listen first is you have goals that you're actually innovating against, which is great because now you're not really just throwing stuff up on the wall to see what sticks. And second, there's something really powerful about not debating each other, but putting the ideas on the wall. They're not that they're anonymous. I mean, sometimes you know where the ideas come from, but don't you find that it takes the personalization out of it when you're not looking at each other, you're looking at the wall?
Totally, totally. Yeah. And it's not that any idea is like bad or good. Like I said, it's about, does it fit right now? Or does it have potentially the most impact? Or maybe it's really easy and we don't have much time this week. So
yeah. Hey everyone. I am here at Launch Street with Derek, the president of Brility. So Derek, your clients talk about your company, Brility, as being an uncommonly perceptive digital marketing partner who helps transform their businesses from the inside out. So break it down for me. What does it mean to be uncommonly perceptive?
Well, Tamara, we at Brility group that answer into two different buckets. The first one about being uncommonly perceptive is around data and insights. In the digital world, you have a living, breathing membrane between you and your clients, which allows you to see in real time what your actions, what impact they're having, and in a very adaptive, iterative approach, which gives us key insights as to how to grow and how to achieve your goals. The second bucket is challenging assumptions. One of the first things we learn is that things are not always as they seem. And we create deliberate experiments. In fact, we have a saying, the experimental mindset. We take the challenges, we challenge the various assumptions that the clients have about the marketplace, about their customers, and we run a series of experiments to unearth the key movers and to see what's really going on. Again, uncommonly perceptive. The insights from that are very informative to achieving everyone's goals.
So then I have to ask, can you give me an example, and you don't have to share the client, but just an example of a time when the client and maybe you walked in with one assumption, but after the experiment, you realized maybe something else was true?
Sure. That's a great question. We have a client that is a software provider going to market with a brand new technology and competing against a juggernaut, which is, you know, more dominant than Microsoft was in its time. The challenge with this client is there wasn't a searched term. It wasn't, the offering wasn't known by anything specific. So we had to be very inventive with exploring how to hook people's attention. And the tried and true marketing method is to sell benefits first, as I'm sure all your listeners have heard, where actually what it turned out, we ran a series of 12 different experiments And the number one winner by far and away was actually showing a bit of the software and how it worked. So more of the tactical, feature-oriented play outperformed by over 100% the nearest one that was more benefit-oriented, like going against most marketing lore. And we're finding that's happening more and more often as customers are getting more and more savvy, and they don't want to hear platitudes and promises. They want to hear the nuances of how you do it enough so that they will believe it and then reach out to learn more.
That's so interesting. I would have never, I think we all buy into that. That's fascinating. So Derek, you're a digital business partner. That's what Brility does. With that, why does your team at Brility then constantly spend so much time digging into your clients' businesses as a whole, not just maybe the digital initiatives that you're working on directly?
Again, a great question. Really, I see no other way to do it. In order to provide our clients with a top-tier service, we have to understand the intimate details of the business, the marketplace, for how else can we explore and present what digital opportunities are out there for you to exploit in order to reach your goals. The nuances matter. And you can't be an order taker and say, well, tell me what you want me to do. Like, the clients have their own business to run. Time is of the essence right now. We need to meet them where they're at and then help them explore their opportunities together.
Derek, this has been so great. I and Launch Street, I hope you do too. I'm going to go make a list of all the assumptions that I have of the ways that we're supposed to do business and the things that work. And then I'm going to work with you to figure out how to test them and see if I'm actually right or just buying into something because, I don't know, I heard somebody say it somewhere else. Derek, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
What do you think has been some of the keys to your success? And I'm curious from both an internal company culture perspective as well as maybe an external market perspective.
I mean, keys to success for me personally, I would say is a big one has been surrounding myself with other entrepreneurs. So I moved to San Diego a couple of years ago to specifically live in this entrepreneur house. And so I was living with, and I lived there for about 2 years. But I moved to the city without knowing anybody previously. And it was the most just beneficial environment that I've ever lived in terms of like growing my network and just having kind of positive energy around me of the other people going on similar journey. So I'd say that's like a really a big one.
Isn't it? I don't know where you came from, but it really is amazing how important it is to have a community around you, because I think there's this myth out there that we're like these lone innovators in our garages by ourselves, and it just doesn't really work that way.
Totally. Yeah. It can, being in that mindset, I know for me, I would say definitely held me back or slowed down the growth of the company. And then also just, it makes you think, I would say, inaccurately about a lot of stuff.
What do you mean?
I would say that there was a point where I didn't feel like I had a lot of support in the company. And so I brought on a business partner, in large part because I basically wanted to have somebody to talk about the business with, not because I necessarily thought he was bringing specific skills to the table. And that's not to say he didn't have skills, but it was a very personal decision, which in hindsight was not, you know, a great business decision.
Right. Well, you get all in your head, right? And you start making decisions that way. And I think that's true for a lot of us, whether we work in companies or for ourselves, we make the mistake of getting in our heads and then making the decisions based on that, which I don't think always works. When you look to the future for Dr. Squatch, I just love saying the name too, by the way. So obviously, if you're listening, you probably get Sasquatch is where it comes from. What's in store in the future?
Yeah, so we're actually in the process of raising money right now. So that's something that's pretty exciting for us. Really, we're looking to grow. And I think what's most exciting for me is really building out a much bigger team in the next 12 to 18 months and kind of being able to build out my dream marketing team, is what I kind of call it. So
yeah,
that's really the goal.
How do you think about growth?
Well, we look at growth, our business is very data driven and we have a paid customer acquisition model. So we're really focused on really like three main things. It's how many new customers are we acquiring? How much is it costing us? And how much is that customer worth to us over a given period of time? And so when we think of growth, I mean, you know, revenue is great and that's definitely an indicator, but like we're really looking at, are we growing our new customer base in a cost-effective way, and are we continuing to add value to those customers and therefore increase their lifetime value?
I love that, because I think I'm just reading this book, which I now will forget the name of because it's like three things. It's a phrase. It's too long for me to remember. But what I loved about it is all about smart business growth. It's like simple numbers, smart growth or something. And
is it the profit book, the accounting one?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Great Crabtree. I forget the name of it too, yeah. But it's really good.
Yeah, it's great. Well, it's too long. The name's too long. But the book is phenomenal. And I'll put the link in the show notes for anyone who wants. I'll find it and put it on there because it is a really good book, yeah, how you think about growth. Yeah, me too. But the reason I asked that, and I was having this conversation earlier with someone, is one of the things that I really kind of had an aha moment when I'm reading that book was about, we look at the top line of revenue, but mm-hmm. we often fail to recognize, well, what did it cost us to deliver on that?
Sure.
Revenue on this product sold, on the whatever. So I wanted to get your perspective on how you think about growth, because it sounds like you're doing it, but we often forget that all the lines that come underneath the revenue.
Yeah, it's a challenge. And it really depends on, what I said was important, but it also depends on what your goal is, right? And so maybe your goal is profit, to have a lifestyle business for your family and you want to have time to spend with your kids. Versus your goal is, you really want to grow a huge company and you're willing to have a couple of years where you're focused on that and you're not making as much money to the bottom line. It's very hard to do both, at least in my experience.
Yeah, I think I 100% think you're right about that. I can tell you firsthand, the balance is tough. How do you think about competition? I have to imagine now that people are seeing that you're doing it successfully, that others are coming in.
Totally. We compete with so many. We're in soap, so it's such a commoditized market, and we compete in so many areas. So I think for us, we have to stay authentic to the customer, with the products and the content that we create, and just continue to do that.
I want to bring it back to you for a minute. How do you innovate?
Yeah. So I think similar to like what I was talking about with the growth process, that's a big part of it. And then I would say on a personal level, I like to have a really structured schedule, where I break off time to work. So I'm the type of person that likes to get in the zone for, 3 or 4 hours and not be interrupted, and yeah. Kind of like get deep on a project. I'm pretty analytical and like systems kind of mindset. And so I like to work on that type of stuff. So creating space to that on either a day to day or a week basis in my schedule specifically, and not taking meetings. So for me, it's usually anywhere from like 9 to noon or 10 to 1 or space like that to carve out is something that has really worked for me.
All right. Be honest though. Do people abide by that? Because that's one of my dreams.
it can be hard, especially with the team, but I don't allow outside parties to schedule time with me in those windows. Like it's just not available on my calendar.
That is
and it's,
so
it's tough being on Pacific time because a lot of people on the East Coast will be like, I can only meet this time. But you have to protect that. And you don't have to do it 5 days a week. So maybe find what days you're also more effective. Maybe Monday you're not, you need a warm-up period. I know that I usually do. So.
No, God, yeah. We got to figure out what the week has in store first before you can like wrap your head around it. But the other thing I appreciate about what you're saying is that like you're a super data analytical guy. And it just is a great reminder to, I think, all of us that you don't have to be the wild purple streak in your hair person to innovate. In fact, that's really not the case, actually. It comes from a lot of different places, and you're a great example of that.
Yeah, I call it, structured creativity.
Yeah, I love it. I schedule time too, but I'm not sure I'm as good as enforcing it. So that's on me, I think. In your company, how do you ensure that innovation is something that everybody either is a part of or has top of mind?
Yeah, the biggest thing, again, is that growth process. So we have a place for all the ideas to be put up. And then we have, a weekly meeting where they're all discussed. And so I think it's a huge part of it. And then just, trying to call out or like acknowledge people, especially when things go really well with stuff that they're working on.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you, I wrote down as you were talking a couple times now, actually, is, one of the things that's interesting to me is Dr. Squatch is really a great example of innovation that happens to be right in front of you. Like you had a need, there was nothing in the marketplace. How do you think about that? Like, is there a lot of innovation right in front of us? Do we need to go blue skies? Like kind of what's your take on that?
I think that different things work for different people. And I'm curious to know more about, you know, your innovation kind of, you know, personalities.
Yeah. Which but, you're a, let me go back. You're an instinctual risk taker. Yeah.
I mean,
which totally make instinctual risk taker, which we'll, we can talk about. It totally makes sense given some of the things you're saying. Yeah.
It makes sense. Yeah. So I just know that that has worked for me, and I have, you know, I have software ideas that I know I could potentially work on that solve problems that I have in my company. So that's just the way that I think. I think there's other people out there that are better at coming up with these like big, new, crazy ideas. But that hasn't been me. So I can only speak to what has really worked for me, which has been internal driven. And again, I'll say it's because, you know, I meet a lot of people that, that want to start businesses, especially around products, and they'll do stuff on Amazon. And I very rarely hear that, like, the person that goes to Amazon and finds some random niche that's underdeveloped, you know, those people, and then, you know, creates a product around that. Like, those people, I see them, you know, they make money for a little period of time, but I've very rarely right. seen like anybody build like a real business off of that. And I think it, they're just lacking kind of the insight to innovate or to drive things at a certain level.
It's so fascinating, Jack, hearing you talk. So I'm just going to tell you really quickly the, and we can talk offline more if you want, but the instinctual risk taker. So instinctuals, people like you are really good at, you know, you have a little bit more of a circuitous thought pattern. So you go A to L to X over to 2 back to A, while the rest of us are a little bit more logical, A to B to C. But because of that, you're able to see patterns and trends before the rest of us mm-hmm. and connect dots in new and meaningful ways. So when you talk about inventing Dr. Squatch and how you kind of saw this thing and there was this thing happening over here, like that's the instinctual side.
Interesting.
Yeah, with the ability to pull it all together. And then the risk taker is about being willing to be uncomfortable and innovating in those uncomfortable moments. So you talked about, you know, moving and going into this entrepreneur house and mm-hmm. launching online. And risk taking is not about being spontaneous or frivolous in your risks. It's about being more willing to be uncomfortable and being willing to go bold. So it's that combination, but you were just saying that and I was like, oh my God, that's totally him. I can hear it. That's great. and everybody does it a little bit differently, right? Which I'm sure you see on your team that, you know, Jill over here in marketing thinks about things differently. You know, Bob over here is an inquisitive, so he innovates by asking questions. Like, you know, it's different for everybody. But I appreciate that you've been able to pull that together to create this company. It's super cool. Before we end up, where can people go to learn and then connect more with Dr. Squatch and you?
Yeah, I would say my one request would be to have people either go to our YouTube channel or our website and sure. just watch our video.
Okay.
So I think it'll be worth your time. And I think, you know, whether you're interested in marketing or innovation, I think that really kind of, you know, when you have a brand and this idea that you create, it doesn't always, like, I feel like I was way further along in my head with what our company represented and our product represented than the reality showed. You know, especially like at the beginning, I had this like vision, but like our website was terrible. The packaging was pretty lame and like all this stuff. And I feel like this video is the first time that everything kind of came together for like what I wanted it to represent. So that was just a really cool moment.
That's very cool. And thank you for admitting that, because I think, you know, it's so easy to Monday morning quarterback and it's very easy to look at successes and go, oh, look at that, like that. Look how he killed it. But the reality is there are a lot of missteps along the way to get you to that place. So I love that this video for you represents like all of it kind of coming together. And I think it's also a great example of, I mean, we know the power of YouTube, but it's a great example of you don't have to do things in the traditional way. The playing field is so even that you can kind of launch the way you want to these days. I think it's an exciting time for innovators kind of regardless of what you do. Last question for you is, what's the first step people listening can take to find the opportunities that are right in front of them?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're like me and you're instinctual, I guess, I would say once, just put that in your head that, you know, that the best ideas for you for innovation will come with like things that are happening in your own life. And I think once you open up to that, and you'll start to put that frame on things that are happening in your life, and you'll start to identify opportunities yourself to start to notice problems or things that are going on that could be opportunities.
I love it. It's like just having your eyes open to even see mm-hmm. it. Most of us have our heads down. We're not paying attention to anything besides our tasks. So Jack, thank you so much for stopping by. I love Dr. Squatch. As I told you kind of offline before we started, my 14-year-old son has basically taken half of it from me because he loves it. I was like, hey, that was for me. But I guess it's totally working in our house. My 10-year-old's next. So thank you for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For real, my teenage son loves the pine tar soap. that actually smells good. And what a great example of bringing an innovative product to life in an innovative way. I can't tell you how many times I look at a new product or service, and they're quite innovative, yet they go to market in the same old boring way. Here's a hint. No one is going to know your product or service is innovative, that it can add value to them, if you market, sell, talk about it in the same old way, because all you're doing there is adding to the noise. Tamara, out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.